The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Here we've got the book club. I have one author now in this hour, and I have another one in the next hour, and that's a note for me too. So any authors out there who are listening to Freedom 106.5 FM and you'd like us to talk to you about your book, your journey, why you started writing, all of the good stuff, you can send me a message at 3061065 with your info, and yeah, we will get in contact with you. Would like to say good morning to Ms. Kemba Jarmoggi, Technical Director of FACRP. Now, they are not strangers to Freedom 106.5 FM. Fonzaman, the organization that has led to discussion about conservation and reforestation and keeping traditions alive. And this young lady is part of that family. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. Kemba, how are you? I hope you're doing well.
Melissa, and all your Freedom 105 listeners, greetings and thanks for having us again.
So Melissa is the name of the hurricane. Tusker is the name of the presenter. Tusker.
Yes, oh gosh, yes.
How are you doing? So today we're talking about your book, Amazonic, The Forest Defender. Now, tell me, well, I know that the environment that you're in leads to discussion about conservation. So I get the title. But tell me more about how you built the story. Who is it for? Before even that, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I'm not sure if you really go into talking about who you are in your capacity when you're representing Fonzaman. So tell us about yourself.
Thanks for that. Thanks for the opportunity. So I am an environmentalist. And I would say, loosely, I'm a lot more than that. So I have a lot of interests. I've always had interests in the environment because that's how I grew up. And those are the things that really ground me as a human being, as well as steeped in culture and tradition. And I was also a youth advocate for many, many years, from since I was 9 till in my early 30s. So I was part of Trinidad Youth Council, CYN, which is Caribbean Youth Environment, Tell Network, so many other youth movements, as well as Global Shapers. This is outside of the Fonzaman Community Reforestation Project. So I've done a lot of youth work, a lot of youth work. And that is what one of the things that I bring to the organization here at Fonzaman is focusing a lot on education, but finding the tools that can really reach different audiences. So, for example, when we were thinking about having a storybook, and, you know, we have this discussion with different writers and creators, and they're like, if a 9-year-old and an 8-year-old could understand, then you could reach a lot of audiences with that, right? So we get the book towards that age group. Now, the idea didn't just come out of thin air. Over the years of doing advocacy work around bush and forest fire prevention, reforestation, land management, especially during the dry season, we were like, we need to find ways to make people more aware or more connected to the actual forest, what we're trying to deal with or to preserve, because they can't only see it on TV in a disaster imagery.
Yeah,
you need to know it in all its splendor, glory, you know, what why is it important, why we love the forest, what it have in it, you know, because when we get older, your brain don't really have time for that. You need to make money, have bills to pay, months and come in, share on book lists, every minute is a book project, schoolwork, you know. So we have a lot of responsibilities, and we, if we be more honest about what take away our time, we will have more honest response to dealing with problems, because we could put our hands up and say, listen, you know, I didn't really think about it that much, but thanks for bringing it to the attention. You know, that's great. But it's just that constant reminder of how do we reach different target audiences, not being too boring, and, you know, keeping fun and that cultural side of it.
So you want to, in other words, plant the seeds, pun intended, in the minds of young children to be aware of conservation and how we treat the environment, because Mama Nature has been responding and pushing back within the last, you know, 6 months, and especially the Amazon. Can you tell us a little bit about what has been happening in the Amazon? Because I understand that there are a few persons who have bought pieces of it in the name of conservation. You could tell us a little bit about that?
So, I mean, it's not really my main area of work, but however, I keep up with what's happening there. And to curb the amount of emissions, it's probably the first time in history we have been seeing a negative in terms of the emissions. Mm-hmm. So whereas it was one of the major carbon sinks, the largest carbon sink in the world, their rainforest is now seeing negative ratings, meaning it's now emitting. Right?
That doesn't sound too good.
Exactly. So what a lot of people who are, especially climate scientists and philanthropists, these people are saying, you know, this is one of our largest carbon sink. What goes on one side of the planet then has a negative side effect on the other side of the planet. And we see that how we are impacted by hurricanes and all sort of strange weather patterns. And it's becoming more and more increasing because we're all connected. Mm-hmm. No matter how we want to say we're in Trinidad or we're here or we're there or we're in Jamaica or we're in Venezuela, whatever. We're all connected. We share the same planet. So what happens, you know, 6 months from now would affect the generation. 2 years from now, we can't really have a straightforward formula because a lot of things that is happening with the climate is unpredictable at the moment. And that is what makes it scary. So if we can make that change and we're more aware, then we could not just only make change in our day-to-day lives because we know us as human being individuals are not the major emitters. We have all these larger companies and industries. But we as citizens need to be aware and able to be better advocates, right? Mm-hmm. So if there is something within the community, you need to know who your area rep is, or you need to, you know, be able to be equipped with the tools or the language or just being able to know who to talk to first. Mm-hmm. And that starts with being in the room as well to know what conversations are being had. So if it's just a stepping stone to learning more, to just open the floodgate of information, and if we can do that with a couple of people, a couple hundreds of people every year, then we know we're making a difference. So when they read the newspaper, they'll be like, ah, this is what they were talking about. I remember this conversation. Mm-hmm. I remember that debate on radio. Look, I've seen this thing again in the newspaper. So, and this is where I applaud media and I continue to encourage the media, be it radio, print, television, to have these discussions. I know it may not be able to have a long, long, long segment and people want to hear the little music and thing too, but we must have the conversations going.
Now, for the conversation to really begin, I think it's important to remind listeners how important places like the Amazon and other forests like that is important to the planet. What does that forest do? Let's talk about Fonzaman as well. What do forests do for the environment?
So one of the main things, to put this very simple, it cleans our air. It cleans the air in our atmosphere. So most of the times you hear people throwing around, you know, it reduces greenhouse gases or it soaks up the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. What it does, it gives us clean air to breathe. And I'm sure all of us want to breathe clean air.
It's like a filter.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So when we, and it's not just that alone, that is one of the main functions that benefits us. When we talk about the landscape itself, the structure of a hill or a forest, what it does is retain soil. So when rain falls, you know, the entire mountain is not washing down into our rivers and seeing all that brown slush. Every time you see brown slush in the river or the roads, that is your mountain being eroded, right? That is signs of that. The forest is also home to wildlife, which, as we encourage our youngsters to remember, a home for wildlife is called a habitat. But what it also does, it creates a safe haven, a safe space. And one of the trick questions I ask the students when we interact with them is, where do rats come from? And they're like, the sewer mist, the sewer and the drain, I just see that running mist. But it comes from the forest. It belongs in the forest. When the ecosystem is destabilized, you then have pests. You then have animals where it's not supposed to be. And that's
invasive
because we
species.
Went and interfere and build and cut road and do this and that and disturb the forest or burn the forest. The forest also continuously replenish us. I mean, people right now are hiking for their mental health and this and that. And it's supposed to be a human right. And under common law in Trinidad and Tobago, we all have the right to enjoy our natural resources. That's why our rivers are public, our beaches are public. We have all these forest trails. Now, what we asked is that when people use the forest and the beach and the rivers and all these things, is that they leave it better than they met it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because this is one of the reasons why we continue to push bush and forest fire advocacy after all these decades of doing this work. Somebody say, but so long are they talking about this, or they're still doing the same thing? Because, you know, donors don't like to fund the same thing over and over. But this is the work that most agencies do, like the fire services, the police. You have to be sharing these messages all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can't be going to the river. We know Trini love a river lime. And after you cook and you have a good time, you reach the river, you feel nice, but then you leave all your rubbish behind. Mm-hmm. And then some good, you know, somebody who wants to do good and clean up, they end up lighting a fire to control this burning, and then the fire gets out of control. So what we like to do is to paint a fuller picture. Mm-hmm. So it's not just fires just magically starting, as people like to claim, and then they say, oh yeah, climate change, fire. No. Climate change responsible for how fast a fire would spread, or how big a fire could get, or how difficult the fire will be able to control. This mm-hmm. is bush and forest fires we're referring to. It doesn't equate to climate change mean a fire. Humans are setting these fires. All right? So getting that message out there, mm-hmm. and we're 1 month away from the start of the fire season. So on December 1st is the beginning of the fire season. Right?
Oh, is it fire season / dry season?
So the dry season starts in January. The right. Met Office would have to declare it. So we don't have a fixed date for that, because mm-hmm. it's determined by the Met Office after they analyze the weather patterns and so on. But it's just very important for us to bear in mind, because fires also tend to happen around the major cleanup times.
Christmas time, yes.
Exactly.
That is true, yeah.
And we have a culture. So when we talk about culture, people think about beating drum or dancing to tassa or whatever. No, culture is everything that forms or creates our identity.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these things are stemmed from practices that we don't even know. Mm-hmm. So for us in Trinidad and Tobago, cleaning by burning stemmed all the way from colonial times, slavery times, where you clean and burn the estate before planting a new crop. And it becomes so normal that no one knows that it's illegal and as an issue, and you have to get a permit, because it's so normal. It's so mm-hmm. normalized that, oh gosh, we have some rubbish to burn. Go outside and burn that day.
Mm-hmm. And to the point that some choose to do it in residential areas, which I don't understand, but that's beside the point. the use of slash and burn, though, was mm-hmm. a traditional way of starting agriculture. Is it mm-hmm. that there is a certain way that you can utilize fire for agricultural purposes? And is that, as you say, it has become so normal that the incorrect way of doing it has been passed on? What is the real purpose of slash and burn?
So, I mean, slash and burn is a result of lack of equipment, technology, and us moving forward with the times. Because there's different ways to dispose of your organic waste, which is all your leaf litter and your branches and your cuttings from your old crops. A lot of these things could be crushed in a mulcher, in a machine that can crush all these material, and it can turn back into soil. Every time we don't put back all that vegetation to compost on the hillside, we are losing soil.
Mm-hmm.
Soil is made up of years and years and years of decomposition of organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it enriches and fertilizes the soil. Mm-hmm. So every time a fire burns, we burn away that top layer of the forest, and as well as all the microorganisms, animals, insects, species that live in the soil. And fun mm-hmm. fact, a lot of animals lay their eggs and have their burrows in the soil. Mm-hmm. So learning about biodiversity is important. We don't have a class in primary school telling us what our forest is comprised of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much wildlife we have, how much birds we have, how much, you know, we don't have that. So getting young people excited mm-hmm. about nature, excited about what the forest have in it, then that would make us understand a little bit more what we lose every time
mm-hmm.
the hills burn. So one of the things
we cut down
like
a tree.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, and as you mentioned, cutting down trees, in some countries I know, they have their land management policies. And one of the things that I picked up, and I believe this was from Germany, after winter, you have to cut your trees before spring starts. Because mm-hmm. when spring starts, you have all your birds nesting, So you can't be cutting a tree when the bird already built their nest.
Yeah.
So you have a more, you lead with more information, the more we informed. And we're not here to bash and say they need this law and that law. These laws are things that were there a long time. That is what amendments are for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We could always amend stuff. Yes, it may be a hassle to some people, but it's what do we want to see in the long run? Do we want to then go in a museum somewhere and see a picture? This is the wildlife we used to have in Trinidad and Tobago. Mm-hmm. And I know Christmas is coming up and all the wild meat eaters. People love our wild meat, but they would watch the forest burn. Where would the wild meat come from?
Yeah.
Right?
And also, you have to pay attention to the cycle of life for the animal.
Exactly.
When their breeding season is, when laying season.
It's within the dry season,
right,
which is when the hunting season is closed. So you have the closed hunting season, you have animals nesting the same time, and you have the hill burning the same time when animals are most vulnerable. The mother wouldn't leave the burrow.
Mm-hmm.
The bird wouldn't leave the nest. They will try to protect their young ones.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a whole generation of animals being lost. So for one fire...
Mm-hmm.
One fire. So we're saying this to say this storybook shed light on these issues.
Yeah.
And it was comprised in a way to bring that realness to storytelling. And we know that's part of our tradition as storytellers. As you know, we love to talk, the gift of gab. But having it written so they can read, they can interact with it. The illustration in the book also has local flora and fauna.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a young, talented designer and illustrator, Richard Taylor, because we love working with young people. We have a lot of young people here at Fundament who volunteer. And when we're able to pay them, when we have funding or so on, we make sure and we can pay people who, you know, when we can.
Mm-hmm.
But we also like to give thanks, so they are acknowledged in the book as being the illustrator and co-authors. And, you know, we really do appreciate all the different people that helped to make this possible.
So let's get a little more into the book itself. The title, of course, Amazonic, the Forest Defender. So Amazonic is almost like supersonic, but for the Amazon.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
The name of the parrot, the name Amazonic is the name of this orange-winged parrot. So the scientific name for the orange-winged parrot is Amazonia amazonica.
Mm.
I think I have it. So this was back in 2018, I believe. We were sitting with one of our directors, board directors, and one of our former directors, and we were trying to decide on a name. You know, we reached to the point where we needed to confirm what name we wanted, and she was like, just play on the scientific name. Why why are we trying to think so hard? And was like, okay. And we just added Nick at the end of it, and it sounded like a real superhero name. So the book is how he became a forest defender, and it took him through a journey where he was in the forest with his family, because anybody who knows about parrots, they tend to live in pairs or live in a large group. So mm-hmm. they're not isolated creatures. And they live for pretty long. They can live up to like 50 years. So they've been in pairs for quite a number of years. So we connected that with the story and him eating some local hog plum fruits. So we wanted to get... So that also leads into a discussion, if we just have to pick apart the book, about local fruits. You know, not parrot seeds you buy in the pet shop. You know, they eat local fruits. This is what they eat. And then it also segue into seeing a man heaping leaves and branches into a pile, cleaning up, and then lighting that pile on fire. And that is how, in the story, the fire got out of control. And then it also brought into the context that when we are fighting fires, because I'm also a trained firefighter for bush and forest fires by the Fire Services of Trinidad and Tobago.
All right, so I'm going to make a note with that, because I'm going to ask how you became that. let's finish.
So every year when we mobilize our team and we go out fighting fires,
mm-hmm.
If we come across injured animals, we tend to bring it to what we have one of our partner organizations called Wake Up Call Shelter,
mm-hmm.
and we will take it to them to rehabilitate, and we would then release them into the wild. Before that was WOC, which was the Wildlife Orphanage that was run by Detta Bush. And so it's kind of paying homage to that as well, because all these people are volunteers, right? So all these people who do these wildlife protection and rehabilitation is so essential, because we then don't have to do that as an organization. We just take it to another NGO who does it, and then we release it later on here. So when he got took to the rehab center in the story, it actually brought in some of the other animals, so the children would get to see the writing of the words. So that's one of the things we advocate for. More storytelling and more print literature means students could see the spelling of these local words. So where it be it Arambuti and Maniku, and it's also accompanied by other posters we've done and other wildlife research. So the more and more our young people see it, when it's time to do a creative writing piece, man, you can lick that up and know how to spell Mapapi and know how to spell Kobo and know how to spell these words. Because phonetically, Kobo is C-O-B-O. But we know it's French derivative, so it's C-O-R-B-A-U-X. But we wouldn't know that unless we see it written. So it comes back to literature, education. How does this, how do we localize more our education to benefit us as a society?
That reminds me of the word kwezi, just as a side note. So the story was built, written by you? Yes?
And one of our colleagues here, Sarah Lee Manmohan.
And the ideas, I guess, would be like the think tank of the experiences that you've had working with Fonzaman and understanding the cycle of life in the forest, etc. And the adventures of the superhero, Amazonic.
Yes?
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you, what is the difference between a firefighter for buildings and firefighter for bushfires? And how can young people get that book? Is it available, where it's available, etc.? And schools, primary schools, if you're listening, we will give you the hookup so that you could get that book into the school, right? We'll be right back. Stay tuned. This Halloween night, terror doesn't end at midnight. It just begins. Tune in this Friday, 31st October at 9:30 p.m. on CNC3 for the pulse-pounding thriller, The Forever Purge. When one night of lawlessness turns into a relentless nightmare, survival becomes the only rule. Join Juan and Adela as they fight to escape a country gone mad before redemption becomes too late. Don't miss it, only on CNC3. Clear your schedule, be ready. It all goes down Friday, 31st October at 9:30 p.m. on CNC3, The Forever Purge. And check it out on CNC3. I'm wondering if it sounds very local, doesn't it? It should be an interesting show. So check it out on CNC3. And you know, as I'm thinking that, the forest in Trinidad and Tobago, the folklore of the forest, has always had that kind of aura, at least in my generation, that you stay away from the forest. And that led to not understanding the role that the forest plays in, you know, how we get our food, as you said, how we interact with it, the respect that we have for it. And this is why I'm appreciating the book for young people and, you know, bringing forward a Amazonic, the hero, rather than Papa Bar, who was very intimidating, you know?
Well, I would say that Papa Bar is the only local folklore that people actually like. Because he's seen as the protector of the forest, whereas the others are quite scary, you know, to people. So one of the things that we talk about, like when we're on the trails, because we have an amphitheater in the forest here, and around the amphitheater we have some local folklore characters, because this month is also Caribbean folklore.
I recall that.
So it, and people, you know, they don't understand how important culture is. Until these things pop up, it's like, yeah, I remember this story. And
the duends.
We still have people, when they come to the amphitheater, they give us a whole monologue of what happened in the village, Sukunya, or the Lagahu, or something like that. And, you know, this weekend, we're also having a small fundraiser here at the center. And because it's Halloween, but we theme it local folklore and caricature. So at the end of the day, you know, we're still bringing people Yes, you come into the bush, but you had to learn something. Every time you come here, you had to learn something. Learn something about folklore. Learn something about culture. Learn something about why the folklore was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because folklore was introduced to Trinidad during slavery.
Oral tradition, yeah.
Right? And once again, it's the stories that make you afraid of the forest. Why? Why? Because they don't want you to become a maroon. They don't want what happened in Jamaica to have happened all over the Caribbean, where people run off and get their freedom. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to stay within that confine, because everything beyond that boundary is scary. Right? Mm-hmm. So when you hear hoot, hoot, or you hear some kind of noise, and a lot of the hunters and the bushmen and people would know, there are a lot of animals in the forest that mimic the sounds of crying babies,
mm-hmm.
or sounds like a child or a baby. So imagine back in the days, instead of treating with an issue where a woman might have been suffering from postpartum depression back in the days when a lot of infant mortality, so she may have been grieving her lost child, it's easy for you to use that psychology, you know, to manipulate whatever storyline you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're dealing with grief, trauma. How do we see the forest? Instead of a place of fear, it's a place of, you know, rejuvenation. It's a space of life. We have so much religions in Trinidad and Tobago, be it if you're part of Ifo Orisha, or you are Hindu, or you are spiritual Baptist, or, you know, whatever. Even we work with some of our Muslim brothers and sisters, and they say one of their tenets is about the environment as well. Mm-hmm. So once you get deeper and deeper into it, be it from a spiritual aspect, be it from a cultural advocacy, be it from just as a citizenry wanting to see better for your country, these are ways in which we can think about the environment, not just in a linear way, green tree, clean air, we could breathe, and that's it. No, it's way more
than that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Than that, right? So this is where we want to, this is what we continue to do, try to meet people where they're at and to have these discussions to just remind you, because we know,
mm-hmm.
we know. But it's somewhere in the back in the vault in our brain. But we know the information, but it's just that constant reminder to just shake us up and wake us up and let us know that the environment is key. A fire management plan is key. Understanding how we manage fires, our attitude towards fires is key. Because if we sit here and see a fire burning, we had no house there, we go grow back green.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just got a good rain and you'll see how it catch back itself.
Every year I hear that.
Yeah.
But people don't see what's going on in the forest. But mm-hmm. they see the ripple effects, but they don't connect it.
Mm-hmm.
So every rainy season, you see flooding, this and that, but no one connects the dots.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as I say, as we become more advanced and we use more technology, there's certain things that AI can't do for us. All right? Mm-hmm. There's certain things we can't just Google and just come up with solutions. A lot of things are there already. You know, just keep the tradition alive, talk to our elders, know why we would have been doing certain practices. It doesn't mean that we have to stay doing it. I know you mentioned before slash and burn, and I'll get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
The slash and burn practices was the belief that dark soil is rich soil. So even if you burn it, they still believe it's rich soil. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why a lot of farmers tend to do crop rotation. You clear a piece of land, you leave all your leaflets on the ground, you cover it down, and you let it rest for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So everything can start to break down and seep into the soil, all the nutrients, and then you change, you do crop rotation, so you switch the area you was planting at before. So I'd give the land time to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because constant burning drains all the nutrients. So even when we started doing the reforestation activities here at Ponsamon, yes, we say a reforestation project, but our first set of work here, our main drive was to stop or to curb the trend of bush and forest fires within our community. And then the task was to start reforesting.
Mm-hmm.
To reforest on a slopy terrain is one of the most tricky thing to do. Because you have to retain water on the land for trees to grow. Trees, and then you have years and years of soil degradation. So we didn't even have any topsoil on this hill.
Mm.
All right? So for the ecologists and for the environmentalists, they're listening. It might be more easier to understand what's going on in the forest. But to the everyday citizen who, you know, going about their business, it's important that we stop these trends. It's important that when we have call to action, that we do the best that we can. I know the media network's been resharing our our bush and forest fire prevention tips. You know, when you see stuff like that come across your screen, don't say, oh gosh, man, share people sharing it. No, everybody share it. Remind as many people as possible. You know, we're not gaining any money from it. We're not gaining any popularity from it. What we want to gain from it is a change in patterns, a change in behaviors, where people could see, okay, I know I really have to light this fire. Well, let me go and get a barrel and light it in it.
Mm-hmm.
And have a bucket of water, or three buckets of water, or a small barrel of water.
Sand or something, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let me make sure and clear around the entire area. The other things that people do is heap up rubbish under a big tree and burn it as if the tree not alive and if the we don't need the tree.
Mm-hmm.
People even heap up rubbish under light poles. Any pole and burn. So I've seen some signs from TN Tech, especially on the Fonpardu Road in Paramin. They have these yellow signs on the light post telling people don't burn around the light post because that is what people do.
Mm-hmm.
Spranglang had a saying, if you see a sign no peeing there, it means people does pee there. Right? And we know ourselves.
No dumping of rubbish means they dump their rubbish right there.
Exactly.
Yeah. We got a couple more minutes to go again, but another point that is that y'all are well known for, well, especially Akila, is the jewelry that comes from the forest. And mm-hmm. that is also a very important part of connecting what the forest yields, because it comes from seeds, comes from parts of the plants. It's amazing what you can find naturally in the forest that can, you know, create jewelry and so on. What is that like to go foraging for these items? I love the jumbi beads, by the way. I instantly think of those, but yeah.
Picking up jumbi beads is nice because it looks so tiny, and then when you look at it, you realize you only have a little bit this much collected, that is something that is fun. The donkey eyes, however, they tend to grow in what the older generation will know as cowhage patch. So it has like a furry coating over the pods, so it can itch you quite a lot. So and then there is lucky seed from the oleander plant, which has the white gooey substance when you open it. I know people remember it as the money seed, the lucky seed.
Lucky beads, yeah.
Where you're still supposed to put one in your wallet so you always have money. And you see, as we talk about this, we're smiling as the memory go on, but all of that is our bush and forest and culture and tradition, right? But one of these things is because we become so modernized. Some people don't really see beauty in that type of wearable art again. But when we talk about sustainability or harvesting resources sustainably, we know that we plant a tree, we collect the seeds, and there's soap seed. That's a fun one. So soap seed gives off a gooey substance in the shell, and when you put it in water, you get actual soap suds. So this is one that we love to use in workshops when we have jewelry making workshops or when Ia has time, because she's busy most of the time. But when she does these workshops, the kids especially, the sensory, you know, it plays on that. So you pick the seeds, you think you have the gooiness, it stick your hand, then you get soap suds from the actual thing. But it's for us to know that it's just so much things to discover. And the funny thing is, the same soap seed, if you Google it, I dare anybody to look it up online, Google soap seed products. You would see soap seed organic, soap seed body wash, baby wash, for $80 for a small bottle. And so it has so much potential for different markets. We're not there yet in doing anything like that, but there is so much resources. There's so much things could come out from the forest sustainably, right? Mm-hmm. Without having to burn down or chop down trees on this kind of thing.
And would that be part of the story as well? Is there, or probably you can write the second book.
So
this was the next question. After, you know, this book here, what would be the next step?
So we plan to do series, and that's why we developed the character like that. So this is his first phase. He became a forest defender. So now he's a forest defender. He could start to champion different causes for the forest.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some stuff in the pipeline. I can't speak too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we are looking at different avenues in which we could continue using Amazonic as our bush and forest fire mascot. In 2023, we had some outreach work dealing with fire management in 6 different communities in Trinidad and Tobago, looking at Carnage, Tableland, Maracas, St. Joseph, Moruga. And we had these fire signs put up. And one of the things that we wanted to have, I mean, we wish to have it in more communities. I mean, once we have the support, corporate support or whatnot to do so, we hope to roll out more of these signs. And it's to have them within communities as well as areas where people go hiking, just as a constant reminder. So we even have one up on Lady Chancellor as well. Mm-hmm. No lighting of fires, no dropping of your cigarette butt, no staring off the path. If you see fire, get out.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a fire, don't continue jogging along the hill. Because one of the things that I failed to mention, one of the reasons what pushed us to developing this mascot was back in 2016 when we had foresters who lost their lives. And one, namely Keith Campbell, because he worked with my dad when my dad was alive, because they all worked for Forestry Division and they were all part of the firefighting unit. So they were all fighting bush and forest fires. Now, he died in that fire. And when they were fighting the fires on the ridge, our staff was you know, helping. Our staff was always there helping. People were still jogging on Lady Chancellor, headphones in, exercising with smoke on top, smoke below, as if they are dirt oven bake. Like,
well, can you not smell the smoke?
Right?
Could you?
So then, this is why we keep saying again, people need to know their power and know how they can make a difference. If you see a fire, don't assume somebody called the fire services. Call. Mm-hmm. Now, data is important. As we talk about culture, tradition, everybody talking oral tradition, all that is fine. But we also need to know about our civic duty as citizens of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. If the fire services receive no calls about a fire that is burning, they have no data to show how much people calling and how much people need this and how much service and how much trucks are needed and how much this. And these systems operate based on data, right? Mm-hmm. And the way how Trinidad is, we don't have a unit from the fire services that goes out and patrol for fires. That is something that the Forestry Division does. Mm. But, you know, there's so many different pieces of the management pie. But as our duty, the most I can ask people to do is remember to the number to the fire services, which we also have in the book here, 990, and consuming local media and reading local things, we would be more aware of local emergency numbers.
So we wouldn't call out the foreign one as if it's the real one. Miss Kemba, thank you so much for coming in today. I know the time was very short, but probably another time when you do the other book, we can talk about the series and continue the great work with Fonza Man. Tell Ms. Akila, I said hello.
You.
And
hello,
yeah, and we hope to see you again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having us again. Thank you.
Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.